We are ready to start using the 9 keys to the Dream Gates. By this I mean the keys that I have found most useful in my practice and teaching, in opening the gates to the many worlds of dreaming and beginning to reach an understanding of the meaning of dreams. In working with any dream, my own or that anyone volunteers with me, the first thing I do is consider the dreamer's feelings. Consider your feelings. What are your feelings when you awaken from a dream? Your feelings will be the best and readiest guidance to the general meaning and urgency of the dream. They will tell you whether the dream is basically negative or positive. They'll tell you whether you have to get yourself together fast to deal with an urgent message coming through in the dreaming, or whether you can take it in a more leisurely flow. I remember vividly a woman who came to one of my dream workshops and started telling us a dream in which she was throwing up buckets and buckets of red liquid. She's spewing this red stuff all over the space. Now, if she'd said this with any negative undertow, we would probably have sent her to an emergency room straight away. I mean, a dream in which you are spewing up blood would not be a very positive indicator, but she's happy, she's laughing, she's bright, she's enjoying sharing this dream, which she finds thrilling, with the group. And as we get into the detail of the dream, she tells us she is trying to catch all this red liquid in beakers and mugs with Mickey Mouse and Walt Disney designs on them, and it gets funnier still. The liquid now sounds as if it's Kool-Aid. So as we play with the dream a little bit, I suggest to her intuitively that if it were my dream, I would get a pregnancy test. And she gets a pregnancy test. She'd been trying to get pregnant for years. She found out that she was pregnant. She was delighted. She was thrilled. She was happy. And the positive meaning of the dream was implicit in her first feelings about it. So the first step, the first key to understanding your dreams and working with them, always consider your feeling. Whatever the apparent content of the dream, your feelings will be a quick, rough and ready, and possibly quite accurate guide to what they are telling you in general terms. The second key to understanding and working with your dreams on an everyday basis is to note your first associations when you have a dream. Let us make it clear that gathering your first associations is a completely different process from Freudian association methods, in which, you know, typically the psychoanalyst, the psychiatrist is there behind the patient or client who's lying on the couch and going through some prepared process. This is very fluid. This is very loose. You're still lying in your bed, probably, or you're in the bathroom, you know, scribbling your notes because your partner doesn't want you to have the light on writing your notes in bed, and you're allowing something to float to the surface of your mind. It might be a word. It might be an image that was not in the dream. As a matter of fact, what floats up in this spontaneous, fluid process of gathering first associations might be a deeper level from the dream than what was in your mind when you first woke up. There are many levels of dreaming, and sometimes we recover the deeper levels of dream experience only after we've caught the latest fish, so to speak, from the dream deeps. I think of a case in which I had had a dream involving a woman I was working with at the time, and the image floated up into my mind in those moments after waking of a flat iron. I didn't know what this had to do with anything. I just took the image, wrote it down, kept it. And when I was speaking to the woman that the dream seemed to involve, I said, by the way, I dreamed of a flat iron, or I got the image of a flat iron after dreaming. Does this mean something in particular to you? She gasped and she said, the flat iron is really the key to my life. The flat iron in my house is the doorstop I use to the only room in my house that is my private space. It is a space where I can get away from my rotten marriage, my rotten job, all my rotten preoccupations, and be myself. I can write, I can play music, I can work at my computer, I can sew. The flat iron is the guardian, the doorkeeper of my private space. So by gathering an image, in the process of gathering first associations that I did not understand and did not seem to relate to the dream, I had the key, as it turned out, to helping someone whom I was trying to help at the time. you'll find your own counterparts to these things. You have a dream in which you're in a hurry to catch a train or a ferry or a plane. How many times have you had a dream in which you're in a rush to catch some kind of transportation? And Jerry in Chicago is not in the dream, but he comes into your mind. And that turns out to be central to the meaning of the dream, because unknown to you, you discover later, you have the opportunity to make a trip to Chicago where you will see Jerry and you have to hurry and get the train or hurry and get your life together in order to get the plane. So treasure those gifts that come floating in over the transom after you've wakened from sleep and might seem to be dangling loose from the dream, but might be a key to the deeper meaning of the dream. Those two first keys are fairly simple, and I don't need to dwell on them at this point. Consider your feelings and consider your first associations. The rest are going to cost us some time and entertainment to explore. The third key to working with dreams and understanding them on a daily basis is to do a reality check. Now, when I say do a reality check with your dreams, I mean play the game of supposing that what you remember in your dream could be played out in waking life, more or less as you dreamed it. However weird, far out, bizarre, or strange the dream may seem to be. Recently I had a dream, a trivial dream, which I did not understand, in which I see an animal decked out for Christmas, with antlers attached to its ears, a ginger animal. I'm not sure whether it's a cat or a dog, but it has antlers attached to its ears, and other details. I cannot figure out what this dream is about until the following day, through confusion over flight schedules and mechanical failure of one plane, I end up on a flight I wasn't originally booked on, and the in-flight movie is a movie called Michael, with John Travolta playing a rather low-grade angel, which begins with a puppy dog with antlers tied onto his ears for some Christmas entertainment. I realized, watching the in-flight movie on the plane I wasn't supposed to be on, that I was watching a movie on the plane that I had previewed in my dream the previous night. So isn't that interesting that we might dream movies as well as real events? So what is reality anyway? I mean, if we are dreaming the movies, what kind of reality are we in? I have never wasted more time myself in working with dreams or seen other people waste more time in trying to understand dreams than when they have neglected to do this basic reality check. I dream that I am at a shamanic gathering where another practitioner is beating a frying pan and another person is beating a toaster oven. And I think these are pretty strange shamanic drummers. I mean, this is rather unusual. The next week, I go to a shamanic gathering where it's quite humid and one of the practitioners is beating a plastic drum that is shaped like a frying pan. And one of the other people present, an inexperienced drummer, asks the sponsors of the conference if he can heat up his deerskin drum inside a toaster oven. I am looking at the playing out of my dream, detail by detail. I'm not trying to suggest that dreams should be taken primarily as literal anticipations of events in waking life. I am trying to say this to you, and I want to say it as clearly as possible. Our dream source is constantly trying to rehearse us for challenges and situations that lie around the corner in waking life. Since the intention of our dream source is to help us prepare to deal with situations that might lie in our future in terms of clock time, isn't it sensible, isn't it prudent, isn't it smart to consider our remembered dreams in the light of the possibility that they are an anticipation of waking events, and to try to read the messages more clearly? When I talk about doing a reality check, I'm not only talking about checking for the possibility that your dreams might be alerting you to a situation in the future. I'm talking about waking up to the fact that even if dreams are not about external reality, dreams are real experiences on whatever level of reality they occur. And it is appropriate to consider that aspect too. In other words, if I dream of a visit from a Scottish ancestor or from my departed grandmother, before I start psychologizing these experiences away by asking myself what aspect of me is a Scottish druid and what aspect of me is my dead grandmother, I'm going to entertain the possibility that my dreams reflect an actual transpersonal encounter with that ancestor, or possible ancestor, or with that departed relative, and I'm going to try to figure out what exactly their message to me might be. This doesn't exhaust other ways of working with dreams, but it is a vital first step that I am going to take. I am going to respect the authenticity and reality of the dream, and I am going to check to determine which order of reality that I inhabit it relates to, whether it relates to a situation in the future, whether it relates to a situation in external reality at a distance from me, the dreamer, or whether it relates to an autonomous order of experience on some other plane of reality. Some shamanic dreamers say the dream world is the real world. That's what traditional Iroquois dreamers say. The dream world is the real world. This waking life they refer to as the shadow world. There's an insight there that I wish to respect, and I suggest we should all remember to respect. Now, although dreams often relate to situations in external reality that lie in the dreamer's future, it is often very difficult, even with the best will and the best effort in the world, to figure out the exact relationship until waking life is caught up with the dream. That's why it's so important to keep notes of your dreams, to keep a journal, and to match your record of dreams with subsequent events in your waking life. A recent example from my own life involves a dream quite some time before the waking event, in which I visited a wonderful little garden in New York City. It's a little garden in a backyard or a courtyard in amongst the high-rises. And I love this garden. It's a good spot. I like the feel. I feel that good things can be done here with good people. And the effect of the dream on me at the time was to say to me, hey, the big city ain't all that bad. You can find good places to do good things with good people. I should consider doing workshops in the big city, which I've been quite resistant to. A year after this dream, I received an invitation from a society in New York City and accepted their invitation to do a workshop. And when I turned up for the lecture the night before the workshop, my jaw fell open because I was looking through a picture window at the back of the room into the garden from my dream. I had not been able to figure out what garden it was when I had the dream, but when my waking life caught up with my dream, the dream acted as a powerful confirmation. It was like having a friendly hand patting my shoulder and a friendly voice whisper in my ears, right on, Robert, this is okay, this is fine, this is the way it's meant to be. I walked out into the garden and looked at the early budding crocuses and loved it and knew that things would work out fine. So that tells us a little bit more than that it's all important to do a check about possible correspondences between dreams and waking situations. It reminds us that even when you can't get that clear in your head at the time, when you remember the dream later on, it can be a powerful advisory, positive and benign as in that case, or cautionary in some other cases, telling you whether to go forward or go back or go sideways. Now the fourth key to dreams that I work with is I find the most powerful single tool for getting to the fuller meaning of dream experiences and dealing with problems and issues that they present. This is the technique that I call dream reentry. In other words, learning to go back through the doorway of a remembered dream to explore the dreamscape in greater depth. Dreams are real experiences. And the full meaning of the dream is inside the dream itself if you can only recover more of the original and full experience of the dream. As we discussed earlier, our dream memories, our dream reports are broken fragments, fogged, confused, garbled, jumbled up. Learning to go back inside the dreamscape is a tremendously powerful and empowering technique that can accomplish many things. It can help you to get the message of a dream straight. It can help you to deal with nightmare terrors if you can learn to go back in the dreamscape and confront a fearful adversary on its own ground. You may discover you have an ally in disguise or a life-supporting messenger if you can only get the message straight. By going back inside dreams, you can renew communication with characters who might have appeared to you in a spontaneous dream. These characters might include spiritual teachers, ancestors, guides for your life, Shamans are traditionally called and initiated inside dreams. Angels make appearances in dreams. Spiritual teachers in many guises make appearances in dreams. By going back inside the dream in which you first encountered a guide or master in a certain field, you can renew that dialogue and deepen it and bring its lessons into your life. Yet another reason for learning to go back inside your dreams is that this will become a way of training yourself to shift consciousness at will in order to enter other worlds and other dimensions of reality. Now, if you're interested in developing the technique of getting back inside your dreams for any of these reasons, or for reasons I haven't mentioned, the prime time to do it, the ideal time to do it, is after you have awakened from the dream. If you can stay in bed, stay connected to the dreaming, let yourself flow, slip, slide back into the image, the landscape of the remembered dream, that's the best time to do it. Sometimes you might be rather agitated, but that doesn't necessarily stop you from doing it. Once I woke at about 4 o'clock in the morning, graveyard shift, my heart hammering against my ribs, from a dream in which I thought I saw myself killed in a car accident in a landscape I didn't know. I'll share this example with you of going back inside the dream for a rather urgent reason immediately after awakening. In my dream, I am driving along a road I do not know through an atmosphere that is dense with coal dust or thick mist, worse than LA on the worst day. And everything stops. I've driven under an overpass. I see a blue car on the overpass somehow, and everything stops. Freeze frame. My perspective shifts. Instead of looking out the car window, I am now looking up at the sky above me. And between me and the sky is a circle of unknown faces, one of them with a state trooper's hat, and other people, unfamiliar uniforms, there's a convenience store behind them, and then suddenly I am shooting up into the sky and I look down and I see my body on a stretcher. Well, I was planning to take a plane the following day, and at the end of the plane trip I was going to rent a car in Pittsburgh and drive down into coal miner's daughter country, down into Allentown, Pennsylvania area, on a trip, and I'm now thinking, wait a minute, is this dream about me having a fatal car crash on this journey through territory I've never driven? To get that straight, instead of us cancelling the flight in a panic, or alternatively going ahead without acting on the information, I try to put myself back into the dreamscape. I have motivation. My focus is location, location, location. If you want to do dream reentry, the realtor's motto is a good motto for dreamers too. Location, location, location. Where am I in the dream? Let me focus on some aspect of the dream, see if I can get back to that location in the dreamscape, and check it out in more detail. So I go back to that place where I see myself amongst the circle of faces. As a matter of fact, I go back before that to an earlier point in the car trip, back to before I get to the overpass, and I see road signs and signs of stores and gas stations. I can identify the blue car on the overpass. It's a Honda. And it all stops again, and this time I follow the onward passage, and I see myself floating up on what looks like a cloud, and I see my physical body down there, or what seems to be my physical body. Then I see myself leaving a second body behind, and I say, oh, wait a minute. It's not time to really go. I mean, I don't want to leave all this stuff behind. I just wanted to check out whether the dream was worth taking seriously. And I come back into my physical body from whatever state I've ascended to. And I decide, prudently I think, that I will simply cancel this trip and not make this journey to coal mining country in Pennsylvania, because my dream reentry has satisfied me that there are dangers here. When I check the route signs, the other details that I found in my dream reentry, they check out more or less with information I get on the maps and mobile guides. Some of the numbers I see on the road signs I've reversed in my account. That's typical, a sort of mirror imaging goes on in our dreams. But in other respects, I seem to have had a fairly literal scouting experience in a fairly literal environment. I believe that dream saved my life. I can't prove that. It is an example of dream reentry after awakening with an urgent agenda. Let me give you a different kind of example of dream reentry that deals more symbolically, but no less powerfully, perhaps more powerfully, with the dreamer's life issues. A woman dreams she is back in her childhood home, and everything that she loves and possesses in her waking life is back in this childhood home where she doesn't really have a room of her own, where a young horse, a brown pony she associates with herself, is being starved and left unfed, and where her sister is going on and on about a diet book. She woke from this dream troubled, disturbed, very sad about the pony in the dream that has gone unfed. The dream might seem minor in itself. It didn't seem minor to her. It brought back all sorts of grief, all sorts of memories of a time in her life when she felt undernourished, underfoot, unrespected, looked down upon. She decided to go back into the dream and find out what it's about. How can I feed my pony is the question she carried in consciousness. She goes back into the dream, and when she finds her brown pony again, it's grown up into a magnificent brown warhorse. It's grown to full size. It is immensely powerful. It stopped worrying about dieting, something the woman dreamer had worried about for 25 years of her life. It's being fed. It's being fed in its own terms. She sees the undernourished brown pony of her teenage self now turned into a tremendous, mature, womanly warhorse, who is strong and powerful but can also in her dream re-entry walk on water. She meets in her travels with her warhorse a guide who appears to her, who tells her that she must feed her authentic hunger and proceeds to show her how through music, through shamanism, and through other creative activities in her life she can do that. I can't begin to convey how tremendously empowering and liberating this dream re-entry experience was for her. It brought her in contact with a guide she was able to locate inside the dreaming, who she's been able to visit again. It put her in touch with a side of her own energy personified as an animal power, as a horse, an immature, starving pony that grows up to be a tremendous, powerful warhorse, capable, despite its weight and girth, of walking on water. So there are many reasons for learning the technique of dream re-entry. In a later session, we are going to help you to enter your own dreamscape again, develop your own dream gate, and draw on your own source of rocket fuel for the journeys you may take within it. A fifth key to working with dreams and understanding them that I find invaluable is that of having a dialogue with a dream character. Now, you might go back inside the dream by the techniques we are going to introduce in another session in order to do this. Have a meeting with a dream character inside the dreamscape and ask whatever questions you are carrying of that character in the dream. Or else you might simply try to put yourself into a relaxed state, take up a pen and paper, and put your questions to your dream character in your mind. Why is that fire-breathing dragon after you? Why are you on my case? What are you telling me? Dialoguing with dream characters doesn't mean only talking to someone who presented themselves to you in a dream, in human or godlike guise. You might find yourself talking to animals. Although many of us lead urban sedentary lives these days, messengers stalk us in dreams in the guise of animals, birds, and fish. There's a wonderful story in modern Greek folklore that the mother of dreams is also the mother of animals, and by night she sends out messages to dreamers, which she sews up in the skins of animals, or the plumage of birds, or the skins of fish. And she will send these animal or bird messengers again and again through sleep to the dreamers she has selected. And if they fail to get the message, she will sew up the message in the skin of a different bird or animal and try again. So there is the wisdom from folklore that animals and birds in dreams may be important messages. I have always found them to be so. I mentioned the story of the sea eagle, native to the northern coast of Queensland, Australia, and to the north coast of Scotland, where my father's people came from, who has come to me in dreams to guide me, has not spoken to me in human language, but has indicated his intention and my need to understand in other indelible ways. You might be able to have a direct conversation with an animal or bird character in your dreams, or you might simply find that by carrying the dream onward, dreaming the dream forward in some way, the message will unfold. When I moved to North America, I started dreaming of bears in a way I had not dreamed of them when I lived in Europe and in my native Australia. I grew up with teddy bears, but the bear wasn't a strong part of my dream menagerie until I came to North America. Then I started dreaming of bears in a different way. And I was curious to get the message. And I asked for a dream in which I could dialogue with a particular bear, a great standing grizzly bear, who had appeared to me again and again. And finally he appeared to me, and he danced with me. And he took off his skin and showed me that I could take off my skin too, and we swapped skins. So I danced inside the skin of the bear, and as I danced with him inside the skin of the bear, he showed me that we were joined at the heart. And when we had finished our dance, he spoke to me, and he said, "Burn sage for me, and invoke my presence when you call a healing circle together." So this is a dialogue with a dream character who appears in an animal form, but is probably not confined to that animal form. And even in animal form, would dialogue in words that a simple human could understand. You will find your own characters. A sixth key for understanding your dreams is to look at who you are in your dreams. Follow your dream self. Who was I last night? You might make some interesting discoveries. To begin with, you might find that in your dreams, you act or behave rather differently from the way you do in waking life. You might find that you have valor and courage in a way that you don't show it in your waking life, or you might find that you're wimping out. There are interesting lessons to be drawn from how you are behaving or not behaving in your dreams in comparison with how you act in waking life. You might find beyond this that in your dreams you are not your regular self. People often become aware of the fact that they are dreaming because they notice some inconsistency or anomaly in their appearance in dreams. A woman in one of my workshops found herself dreaming, looking at her face in a bathroom mirror, and she noticed something that was unusual. Her face was covered with shaving cream, and she was holding a razor in her hand. At which point she thought, "Whoa, this is not the way things normally are. I'm not in my regular body," and became aware that she was dreaming. This is, if you like, a body-hopping dream. They're not that unusual. I have occasional body-hopping dreams myself, in which I notice that I'm not in my regular form. Sometimes I'm not in human form. In one of the dreams in which I noticed I was apparently in the body of other people, I found myself first in the body of a tall, black athlete who was having a quite exciting life on the fast track. I enjoyed it for a while and thought I'd better move on. Then I found myself in a sort of Dan Quayle-type existence on a golf course with everyone wearing green pants or plaid pants, obsessed with hitting golf balls around. I found this so incredibly tedious I had to move on briskly and found myself in the body of an eccentric scholar with a wonderful library, doing wonderful arcane research, but with certain aches and pains in his joints. The most important aspect of following your dream self, monitoring your dream ego, is that as a practice, this will help you to become more aware all the time, sleeping and waking, of the flow of your thoughts and feelings. It will enable you to adopt a witness perspective, to monitor the thoughts and feelings that are flowing through your consciousness before you buy into them. By analyzing how you behave or do not behave in dreams that is different from your behavior in waking life, you might also discover new possibilities for action or for abstaining from action that you should consider in your waking life. The seventh key to working with dreams is the endless game of symbol exploration. It can take you anywhere whatsoever. Do you dream of changing your clothes, or changing your hat, or changing your shoes? What might this relate to? If it's my dream, perhaps it's about a change in how I present myself to the rest of the world. A change of clothes might be about the public appearance that I make. A change of footwear, for me, it might be very different for other people. A change of footwear might be about how I ground myself or fail to keep myself grounded. What is a shoe? A shoe might be many things. Amongst other things, it is something that has a sole and makes it easier for us to walk on the earth. So a change in my footwear and my dreams might relate to the way that I ground or fail to ground myself. If my shoe pinches, it might mean that I'm in a position, a job, a relationship, a line of practice or a line of study that is not flexible enough or large enough or generous enough to accommodate me. If I'm changing hats, change of role, trimming the brim of my hat. These games can take you anywhere. You'll want a good dictionary of symbols, encyclopedia of symbols. If animals or birds inhabit your dreams, you'll want to track them through the literature and study their habits and see what in the habits of birds or animals who flock to you in your dreams might relate to different aspects of your own energy. A recurring motif in a series of dreams of mine was that when I encountered fearsome adversaries, great hulks who rose up to block my path or threatened me physically in my dreams, I was able to overcome them again and again and again with the aid of a very simple tool, hardly a weapon, a schoolboy's ruler, a ruler of plastic or of wood, something quite fragile. Yet once I took a schoolboy's ruler in my hand, I could overcome quite hulking and monstrous adversaries. I began to wonder about the symbol, and synchronistically, in the way that favors dreamers who are hunting the meaning of dream symbols, an old book flew open on a desk, and there was a picture of the Egyptian god Tahuti, Thoth under his name of the Measurer, Tahuti, he of the Ibis power. And Tahuti in the picture is holding a measuring rod, a measuring stick, a ruler, by which he weighs out, he regulates the balance of human life, the balance between humans and gods, holds the balance. And I thought, well, my ruler and the ruler of Tahuti perhaps are connected. It's about establishing a balance, establishing a just measure, establishing a just order. So be alive to the many quests upon which the dream symbol may lead you. Be open about it. Be open to the free flow of association. Be open to the workings of synchronicity as you follow your research. Don't buy into any prepared hash of symbolic interpretations, although they might work for you if you come from a particular culture that dreams in a certain style. A wonderful old lady I know who runs my favorite Italian grocery store in upstate New York tells me, horses are demons in my dreams, she says. Well, horses are not demons in my dreams. I mean, horses are wonderful, free, animal, wild energy. They might be the animals that draw the chariot of the soul. But for her, they're demons in her dreams, and that works for her according to her traditional system of dream interpretation, perhaps her traditional southern Italian style of dreaming. For you, if you belong to our hopefully increasingly open culture, you don't need to buy into any set of prefixed associations or interpretations. One of the fun things to do with mysterious characters or elements in dreams that is part of symbol exploration is to play the game of pretending you've just arrived from outer space and you don't have the faintest idea what a toaster oven is, you don't know who the president is, you don't know who Liz Taylor is, you don't know what a banana split is. And you have to explain this in the simplest possible language to the delegation from Alpha Centauri. So, what is a banana split? Something I loved in childhood, it's something that's mushy and sweet, it's something that reminds me of going to a particular store or cafe or soda fountain with Aunt Miriam when I was 6 years old. It reminds me of what happened to me when I was 6 years old with Aunt Miriam, and so on. Who is the president? Well, you know, he might be a fellow from the South, a fellow who has a problem over his fundraising sources. It might be one of many different things. Who is Liz Taylor? And so on. It is remarkable what will jump out at you about the meaning of the dream if you go through this process of pretending that the delegation from Alpha Centauri is standing there in the room, and you have to explain to them, you know, what a metal is. What is a silver spoon? What is silver? What is a spoon? What is it used for? This is a tremendously interesting and entertaining part of unlocking the meaning of your dreams for yourself. You can have a friend play the role of the visiting delegation from Alpha Centauri, which becomes a fun part of dream sharing. Symbols invite us from the level of what we know to what is beyond what we know in our ordinary minds. And dreams must often talk to us in symbols rather than in clear literal terms, because dreams are a passage, quite often, from the known to the unknown, from our everyday waking lives to larger and more generous order of realities. Therefore, dreams, although the dream source might wish to speak to us as clearly as possible, must often use a symbolic language to help us to make the passage from the little mind to the big mind. And a good symbol, by definition, will resist any final interpretation that shrivels and reduces it down to a little packaged explanation. There will always be a mystery, a noumen, a quality of the noumenous about it that resists trivializing interpretation. The eighth key to working with dreams on a regular basis that I find most helpful is playing the game of asking what part of me the different elements in the dream might represent. This is the Gestalt game, if you like, in Gestalt dream theater or Gestalt-inspired dream theater. Players might enact the role of every single element in the dream, including the doorknob, the rug on the floor, the window, the dog that's yapping behind the sofa, and ask each element in the dream what it has to say to the dreamer as an aspect of the dreamer's own soul, the dreamer's own mind, the dreamer's own identity. Dream houses are an endless fascination. Perhaps you found yourself in a dream in a house you do not know, or in a house that is initially familiar, but opens out into rooms and prospects and perspectives that you never suspected. Have you dreamed of walking into a room in a familiar house that is not there in ordinary reality? Have you dreamed of finding whole levels of a house that you never knew existed? Of finding a house that contains great attics of possibility, great basements of buried subconscious stuff that you are not aware is there? The house in dreams may be a symbol, a metaphor for the whole of the psyche. It might be a metaphor for the body of the dreamer, in which problems with the wiring or the plumbing or the facade or the paintwork might reflect problems in the physical body with the physical counterparts of the electrical, plumbing systems or the cosmetics, the skin. So the dream house is a good candidate for the what part of me dream, because your dream house, you may discover, may contain a whole psychic geography of yourself, a whole geography of your psyche. The dream house, of course, could be a literal house, whether or not you know one at the moment that corresponds to it. But you know, dreams that turn out to be about literal situations and external reality are not only about that. Sometimes a dream that points us to a literal situation in the outer world is pointing us to the symbolism of that outer world situation. So if your dream house, which is in need of a paint job, has its plumbing screwed up and is having problems with the fuse boxes all the time, if this dream house turns out to be the house you live in outer life, or the house that someone close to you lives in outer life, that doesn't mean the dream is only about that. Maybe it's pointing you to the symbolism of the literal house in outer reality, and maybe you then need to play the same game with that literal house. What part of me needs the paint job? What part of me needs the attention of a good plumber? What part of me needs to be rewired? This game is tremendous fun as dream enactment, as dream theater, and it works very well on certain levels. It rarely exhausts the meaning of a dream. Very few approaches can ever do that, fortunately, because dreams are wiser than we are. But asking which part of me is the tiger and which part of me is the sheep is a very good way of coming at the multiple levels of meaning in dreams and developing a geography of soul from the language in which dreams speak to us. The ninth and final key to working with dreams and understanding them on a daily basis is one of the most important. It's dream enactment, by which I mean, once again, we need to do something with our dreams. If we do not do something with our dreams, we will not dream well. It's a bit like this. You have a friend deeply interested in your well-being, who calls you up from time to time with advice on everything of consequence in your life. He or she might call you up to tell you that the stock market is about to crash. Unless you get your money out, you'll be broke. He or she might be calling you up to tell you that you really need to have your kidneys checked, or else you're going to be in a health crisis. He or she might be calling you up to tell you that unless you make a certain move at the office, you might be out of work. He or she might be calling you up to tell you that your dream partner is going to be at lunch in the Italian joint down the road at Tuesday at 12 o'clock. Now, if you have a friend who is able to give you advice on all such matters, and even larger ones, free gratis and for nothing, because your friend has your best interests at heart, and you never say thank you, you never remember her birthday, never send her a greetings card, your friend will get ticked off with you and might actually cease speaking to you or do something else to show her displeasure. We need to thank our dreams and the powers from which they come. And the way we thank our dreams and the source from which they come is to do something intelligent and creative with our dreams. The first step, of course, is to keep your dream journals. Write your dream stories, give them a title, and perhaps write from them. A very simple method you can use of writing from your dreams, which is a great way of honoring dreams and releasing their creative energy, is to write a personal dream motto or dream proverb. See if you can distill what a dream is telling you in a one-liner. For example, I noticed in a series of dreams that my car is parked in a place where the parking meter has expired or there's some other problem and I'm going to get ticketed if I leave it there or even towed away. So I might write a dream motto saying, I've been stuck in the same place for too long. Or, more literally, my car has been parked in the same space for too long. It might be a literal advisory about remembering to feed the meter or move my car to a better parking spot. Write a dream motto from your dreams, in addition to a dream title. It's a way of getting a handle on the material and getting a rule for personal action. If you want to flex your literary muscles a little bit here, you might choose to turn a dream report into some spontaneous verse. Maybe sloppy haiku would suit your style. You don't necessarily have to write the strict 17-syllable haiku from a dream, but if you set yourself the task of distilling the essence of a dream in three lines of poetry, you'll have fun. Once again, you might find the lesson becoming clearer to you. But the business of dream enactment, the great game of dream enactment, reaches beyond these writing exercises. It reaches to considering how you can manifest the energy and insight of dreams in your waking life. On one level, this might involve looking at whether you have had a happy dream that you would like to see fulfilled in some way in waking life and working towards that conscious objective. Or alternatively, it might involve taking action in waking life to avoid the fulfillment of a dream that contains ominous or evil portent for you. It might, in a more general sense, involve finding ways of bringing the creative flow, the energy of the dreaming, into the rest of your life. Suppose you see yourself in a dream, detached from your own prodigious other self, your own genius self, who is acting and doing things separately from you. How do you in your waking life bring yourself together with this creative, impassioned, but sometimes misunderstood self that you see separated from you? Suppose you dream that you see your five-year-old self stuck in a place where you lived in childhood, or wandering lost or sad, hiding in a closet, not with you, or even living happily but on its own, separate from you. Perhaps your dream is telling you it's time to bring your five-year-old self, your lost child, back, reclaim all of your soul energy and live with it, and feed that five-year-old self. A woman brought a wonderful dream to one of my workshops recently, in which she saw herself on top of a tall school building, grey school building, much higher than any school building she'd seen in waking life, much higher, many more stories, many more levels, vaguely medieval facade. And on top of the building, she sees a five-year-old child who she later recognizes as her five-year-old self, who is playing dangerously close to the edge of the roof And in the dream, the dreamer is terrified that her five-year-old self is going to fall from the building and be killed, and is running and screaming and trying to protect her five-year-old self from falling. And her five-year-old self turns to her and with serene calmness and radiance takes her hands and says to her, "It's all right, don't be scared." The five-year-old says to the adult dreamer, "Don't be scared." She takes the hands of the adult. She leads the adult to the edge of the building. She pulls her over the edge and shows the adult they can both fly. And they fly over this landscape, over the playgrounds, over the surrounding locale. And the dreamer has the most wonderful and thrilling experience. And at the end of it, she feels her five-year-old melt into herself. And the strength and energy and love and beauty of that is like a bullet of light entering her heart. And they are one. And she can fly. So in that dream, she was given the gift of recovering a lost child, and since then in her waking life, she has been trying to live, playing at living, with the creativity, the friskiness, the spontaneity that the recovery of her lost child has given her. So dream enactment might mean many things, and I hope that you, through these sessions, and in ways you will discover for yourself, through your many adventures in dreaming, will find the ways to live more fully, more generously, more passionately from the energy and insight of dreams.